From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 19th day of January, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll explore the commodity markets and prices with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. We'll take a deeper look at the weather forecasting, particularly as it relates to the drought in Argentina and how it has or maybe has not impacted full yields there with Mike Tenorum. He'll talk about the weather forecast too. And then as we close out our time together, we'll explore what sales of agricultural equipment has looked like over the last year, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
As we get started today, I'd like to send out best wishes today to Leon Isar from the Piotone area. He was born in 1931 and listens to the program every day, says his daughter, Nicole. March corn today settled at $6.77 and a quarter. It was 4 cents lower a bushel. The May contract at $6.74 and 3/4, down 4 and a half. And December, the new crop at $5.96 and a quarter, down 4 and 3/4. March soybeans, $15.14 and 3/4, 9 and 3/4 lower. The May down 10 cents at $15.11 and a half. And November soybeans, 9 and 3/4 lower at $13.64 and a half. For the new crop bean meal, $6.90 lower. The bean oil down 97 cents. Wheat futures off 8 cents at $7.34 and a half, and the March for the soft red, the hard red at 8.32, 9 and a half cents lower. Live cattle futures at $159.12 and a half, down $1.10. Feeders at $180.10, down $1.62 and a half, and lean hogs at $84.40 per 100 pounds, $1.80 lower. Crude oil at $80.62 a barrel, down a rather up 82 cents. Diesel fuel at $3.28, that's 9 7/10 cents higher. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.60 7/10, up 7 3/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands about 98 points lower at 33,290 for the day, and the S&P 500 down 11 3/4 points on the afternoon. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. I hear you're driving back from the Farm Futures gathering in Coralville, Iowa. How's that going?
Yeah, it was actually, it goes today and tomorrow, but I spoke this morning, and so I spoke yesterday too at their, I don't even know what they call it, financial seminar ahead of time. So kind of a three-day deal, but the main Farm Future Summit is Thursday and Friday. And awfully big crowd there today, so I was impressed with that, but definitely a lively discussion. I think they've got several good speakers there. So pretty good crowd.
I will say that we do know that Farm Futures will release their updated numbers later today. We'll get those incorporated into our Commodity Week program, I'm sure. Should be interesting to see what they have to say. But at the moment, let's talk about what you heard from farmers and their marketing plans and what they asked you most often about old and new crops. Start with old crop corn. Are they worried? Are they happy that they still have crop in the bin? Do they have a lot of crop in the bin? What did you find out?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like they want to be tight-fisted for the time being. I heard from several guys that said, I don't feel like I need to move anything. And yeah, the basis is backed off for now, but we got to think that later on it's going to get a lot better, is what they were telling me. And I said, you know, there always is that chance for sure. But at the same time, you got to understand that we know now, you know, what a person can make at today's price, whereas we don't really know what's going to happen on into the future. So I just tried to encourage them to, you know, spread their risk out a little bit, try not to put all their eggs in one basket. But I would say that they asked me more about new crop than what they did old crop.
So they're not particularly worried about old crop. They're happy. They probably have money. They're worried about whether they can make money in the coming year. What did you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, Todd, and I'll get to that, but you know, what's interesting to me is that you've got corn in the bin, which is essentially your long corn, right? And so I tried to encourage people to understand that, you know, you can be not worried, if you will, about corn prices on old crop because you feel like this report gave us some support and because you feel like we're going to be in really tight supply, but you've still got a long position, you know? So when we start looking at new crop, the reason they're more worried about new crop than old is because margins are so thin. And so I think it teaches us a couple of different things. When margins are so robust, like in 22, we know pretty good sized crop, especially in Illinois. You know, you've got awfully good prices, which makes for big profit margins. And I think it gives us a little bit of a false sense of security. Whereas on new crop, you know, there's not near as much meat on the bone. You look at the stuff that, for instance, the Farm Doc teams put out as far as what their projections are for net income for this year, you know, and what the crop budgets look like for, you know, for instance, corn and soybeans, but especially corn, you know, on highly productive farm ground. You know, the forecast is that it's going to be down substantially. So what I'm telling them is let's lock in a worst case scenario, make it a flexible strategy, but at least have a really strong floor into this market just in case we see really big acres this year, and you know, if Brazil ends up having a big crop as well.
And I will say that the Farm Doc team updated their supply and demand tables for both old and new crop this morning, and folks can see those online at the Farm Doc Daily website. Look in the archives. It'll be a YouTube video. You can just watch it. You can also just download the PowerPoints there if you'd like to see them. A couple of things that jumped out at me on those tables was first that they, unlike last week when we were at $5.10, did raise it to $5.20. However, when they talked about that number for the season's average cash price for corn for 23-24, they made note that that price, given the 14.1% or 14.2% or 14.3% stocks to use ratio they were using, was very high still. And that worried them some, I think. Does it worry you as well?
Yeah, so typically, Todd, that 14% stocks-to-use ratio, you don't have the need for a demand rationing type rally like you would have, oh, say, below 12%, and especially when you get much below that. A lot of folks have said, hey, we're clear down here at 8.9 or 9%. You know, we ought to be looking at more of a rally, but we've already gotten a rally. So, you know, we're kind of on the downhill slide. Higher prices have, you know, scared away a little bit of this demand. So I would share their concern that there's certainly a potential when you're building stocks that you could see, you know, this price level actually erode from you pretty quickly. And so my personal thought is that, you know, whenever you're already pushing $6 as far as corn prices are concerned, and you got a lot of folks that are a lot smarter than what I am thinking that $5, $5.10, $5.20 might be too high, you know, it probably is a really good idea to at the very least step in and put a floor under some of these prices.
Any news on the soybean side that you heard that you think was of interest from the farm futures gathering?
You know, I think a lot of folks are feeling like bean acreage is still going to be awfully strong. You know, not necessarily that you're going to see more beans than corn, you know, but you could see within 2 to 3 million acres. And I would agree with that. I tend to agree that bean acres will be fairly strong. Fertilizer price in the heart of harvest this last year when people were making decisions were awfully stout. And I've got to think that really strong bean income over the last few years could certainly get you in a situation where you've got, you know, the opportunity to, you know, to see people step away from some of the corn acres. Now, my thought process is that when it gets right down to it, it's going to be within 2 to 3 million acres. As this renewable diesel thing continues to grow over the next 2 or 3 years, you know, it might be a little tougher, but I don't think, you know, for bean acres to be outdone by corn so easily, but I think that's a conversation for a later date.
Okay, thank you much. We will take that conversation up at a later date. We appreciate you giving us a chance to talk to you as you drive back from Coralville, Iowa.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, the Environmental Protection Agency, an Army Corps of Engineers, has published the revised Waters of the U.S. rule in the Federal Register, that's known as WOTUS. The publication means this revised rule will go into effect on March 20th of 2023. EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers announced the rule at the end of 2022, which will replace the Navigable Waters Protection Rule. At the time, American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy DeVos commented, EPA has doubled down on the old significant nexus test, creating more complicated regulations that will impose a quagmire of regulatory uncertainty. The rule comes as agriculture awaits a Supreme Court decision in the Sackett versus EPA case, which could send WOTUS back to the drawing board. On a related note, a California congressman just assigned to the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee had a legal run-in a few years ago with the EPA and Department of Justice over alleged Waters of the U.S. violations. Fourth-generation tree, vine, and wheat grower John Duarte sued EPA after it told him to stop plowing his land in violation of WOTUS and was then sued by the Justice Department for millions in fines. Duarte later settled the case, agreeing to pay $330,000 in civil penalties and $770,000 in mitigation credits and limit use of 44 acres. Now Duarte's been named to the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, giving him a more powerful voice on WOTUS. Tony Francois, an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, represented Duarte and says the very thing EPA is telling you not to worry about is what they sued Duarte over. Just plowing.
Regulators have used the expansiveness and the ambiguity and vagueness of the significant nexus test to really push the outer limits of their authority.
National Cattlemen's Chief Counsel Mary Thomas Hart argued in December, by the way, the final Biden EPA WOTUS rule shows farmers like Duarte may still face fines for normal farming practices.
The rule doesn't clearly exempt isolated or ephemeral features from federal jurisdiction.
And American Farm Bureau Federation's Courtney Briggs claims EPA and the Army Corps jumped the gun on an expected Supreme Court ruling that's still, as you've already heard, later to come this year.
That was one of the reasons why we asked the agencies to wait until the Supreme Court issued a decision in Sackett, because we're introducing a new and frankly confusing rule to an already very convoluted permitting process.
Which brings us back to the Sacketts versus EPA case, which could send WOTUS back to the drawing board. The Sackett case is not focused on the new rule. AFBF General Counsel Travis Cushman says you would probably need to have a new challenge to that rule based on the Sackett Supreme Court decision, which has yet to be litigated. And finally today, the producer price index for demand in December declined by 0.5%, seasonally adjusted, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics has reported. The index measures the average change over time in the selling prices received by domestic producers for their output. Final demand prices advanced 0.2% in November and 0.4% in October by comparison. The index for final demand increased 6.2% in 2022. After rising 10% in the previous year. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. Mike Tenura is now here from T-Storm Weather. Find him online, by the way, at tstorm.net. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time with me today. Let's get started in South America. Argentina has suffered through a long drought, though I believe they've gotten some rainfall and maybe more is on the way.
Well, there's a lot of rain on the way over the next week, and that's why things are going to improve a little bit as we move into that period of time. To this point in the season, though, it's been pretty dry. In fact, it's been the number one or number two driest growing season so far, depending on how you measure it. And that encompasses the key states of Buenos Aires, Cordoba, and Santa Fe. And that would include about 75% of corn and soybean production in Argentina. So if you go back to last year, it's definitely been unusually dry. Things started to change a little bit in December, in that we did see some okay rains over the period of December 1st through Tuesday, just 2 days ago. It was the number five driest period of time. So not number one driest, but it was still pretty dry. And when you combine that with how it was earlier, it's definitely one of the driest seasons on record. Once we got into January, it rained a little bit more. And that was primarily because of a fairly significant event on the first and second of the month that brought about 1 to 2 inches to parts of these regions. So over the first half of the month, it's basically been number nine driest going back to 1986. Now, the difference going forward compared to where we've been is that we have a number of good chances for rain and thunderstorms. The first wave of energy will move across the country tonight and tomorrow, and that should bring decent rainfall to the southwestern half of corn and soybeans. So we'll see a little bit of a stabilization or an improvement once we get into the weekend. More importantly than that, a much larger system will slowly move across the country from Tuesday through Friday coming up, and that should produce more than one round of thunderstorms. In the end, it looks fairly likely for 1.5 to 3 inches to fall over the next 7 to 10 days, and that is substantial for any time of the year, and we think that's going to stabilize things. And by time, especially for the later planted crops, which include most soybeans and later planted corn, which is about 75% of it. So once we get into February, we'll have to reanalyze everything. But until we get there, it looks a little better.
So it sounds from your assessment that things aren't maybe as bad as we had thought there. Is that where you're standing?
Well, they're certainly not good. I don't think there's any doubt about that. One of the biggest uncertainties regards how large the soybean crop will be. A number of government agencies in Argentina are talking about production numbers that would be around 35 million to 40 million metric tons. And that is certainly possible, but we need to keep in mind a couple of different things. Given the planted area that they have for soybeans across Argentina, the lowest production number we've ever seen with that planted area would be around 38 million metric tons, and that would be driven by what happened back in 2009, which was one of their worst droughts on record. A similarly low production number also happened just 5 years ago in 2018, when it was the driest on record across the key production region from January through March. But as you know, Tom, soybeans generally can do okay if they get rains at the latter half of the season. And that's basically starting now. So if we get really good rains going forward, it's difficult to imagine a situation where this would be the worst crop on record, because it's still only about 1/3 to 1/2 way through the growing season. So that's just our assessment, but we don't have any boots on the ground and we don't have any special modeling to back that up. We just know that historically, their worst yields occurred when it was very dry from January through March, and we're still in January with another 10 weeks to go until we get to the end of March.
Brazil still looks good?
Brazil's probably doing okay. The only concern would be in Rio Grande do Sul, where it's been fairly dry over the last 30 days, and there's not much rain coming up over the next week. Once we get beyond that, we think it will turn stormier. And once you get north of Rio Grande do Sul, rains have been pretty adequate to even abundant. So the story in Brazil is, you know, less clear than Argentina, in that we know we don't have a bad crop. We just don't really know how good it is, and we'll have to wait and see on that.
Here in the United States, many have continued to worry about the hard red winter wheat crop in Kansas, Oklahoma. Conditions changing there at all?
Well, it's going to take a while to get out of a long-term drought, because many of these areas have been unusually dry, not only over the last 6 months, but going back even further than that to about 9 months ago when the drought started. Now, we're going to see a pretty decent event for January standards tomorrow night and into Saturday, and that will focus on that driest area of Kansas, where 0.2 to 0.6 of an inch of water are expected. Another system moves through early next week that will be a little bit further to the south, but should encompass parts of Oklahoma, Texas, and maybe even southern Kansas as well. So it is a little bit stormier there, at least for the next week. But in order to end a major drought in the plains, you need to wait until March and April, because that's when their climate turns a lot wetter and you can get these big, slow-moving systems that generate a lot of rain. Whether or not that happens will take a while to determine, but at least in the near term, there are some chances for rain and snow.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yep, great being here, Todd.
That's Mike Tenuri. He is with T-Storm Weather. Find him online at tstorm.net. It costs a lot of money to buy a combine, and the Association of Equipment Manufacturers say that last year there were healthy gains in sales of combines. However, that ag tractor sales were down from the previous year in 2021 in both the United States and Canada. Michael Clements from the NAFB, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, has more on why.
Kurt Blades, AEM Senior Vice President, Industry Sectors and Product Leadership, says the decline largely reflects the robust sales in 2020 and 2021.
What has changed with 2022 is softness in that under 40 horsepower tractor market. That's more of an indication of how strong that under 40 horsepower tractor market was during the pandemic. We have seen really strong numbers in the ag specific markets, those 100 plus horsepower tractors and combines and even four wheel drives. So that's an indication that the ag market continues to be strong, and the softness is showing up in some of those more consumer style markets. They represent a lot of volume, so that makes the percentages look a little bit lower.
Combine sales saw continued growth year over year and even month over month in December.
Combines are ending the year at almost 16% above where we were this time last year. That's a very solid indication that farmers feel good about the economy. As you know, combines are a considered purchase. You don't wake up tomorrow and decide that you're going to spend $750,000 on a piece of equipment unless you feel pretty good about what the future holds. So that's certainly part of it, is the optimism that's out there about current income as well as the prospects for future income. The other piece that's very real is the technology of combines continues to improve.
Looking ahead to 2023, supply chain issues remain a concern. However, Blades says the sector and farmers are adapting.
We do see some light at the end of the tunnel. Certainly our members are telling us that. That being said, there are some underlying fundamentals that aren't going to be resolved anytime soon. At the heart of the supply chain challenges are labor challenges, a shortage of good solid workers, a shortage of transportation in the trucking industry. But I think some of the fundamentals of the industry have also changed, maybe permanently. I think it's a good thing when farmers are able to plan ahead for what their equipment needs are going to look like next year, 2 years, 5 years out. And that sort of mitigates any of those delivery challenges they might have experienced in the last few years.
Electrification has been big in the automotive world and even quickly growing in construction equipment. Blades says it will remain a topic of interest in the next few years.
It's really difficult to create the sustained level of power that's needed on a farm with an electric engine. That being said, I think we all in the ag industry and certainly in the equipment industry have a desire to reduce our emissions. There's lots of technologies that can lead to that, and we as an industry are giving careful consideration to all of those pieces. There will be places where electrification makes a whole lot of sense, but there are other places where the technology is not quite there yet. It's going to be interesting to continue to watch over the next few years. I continue to be optimistic that the off-road equipment industry, we find ways to innovate that will astound people and will meet all of those ultimate societal goals.
He adds that technological innovations will continue and help farmers be more efficient in the future.
When you think about a tractor that knows where it is in a field and it begins to drive itself in straight rows, what else can you do there? Whether it's sensors or whether it's additional data that's collected or whether it's being able to spray a specific weed or a specific pest problem, that's exciting technology. So I think in the coming year and the coming years, I think we're just on the cusp of what that's going to mean for individual farmers and their operations, beginning to think about not just fields of crops, but thousands of crops in a field and treating those individual plants with a specific practice.
Learn more from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers online at AEM.org. Michael Clements reporting.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. It does come to you from the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. Don't forget, we'll update our Commodity Week program later this evening up on our website at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.